सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम्। ॐ सहनावतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सह वीर्यम् करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Let's chant this first verse together. Om pratasmarami hridi samspuradatma tattvam satchitsukam paramahamsa gatim turiyam yat swapna jagara sushuptama vaiti nityam तद् ब्रह्म निष्कलमहं च भूतसङ्घः। प्रातस्मरामि हृदि संस्फुरदात्मतत्त्वं सच्चित्सुखं परमहंसगतिं तुरीयं यत् स्वप्नजागरसुषुप्तमवैति नित्यं तद् ब्रह्म निष्कलमहं च भूतसङ्घः। In the morning, pratar smarami, I remember, I meditate upon this atma tattvam, the truth which is the self, samspurat, shining, hridi, in the heart. Satchit sukham, which is of the nature of sat, existence, consciousness, chit, and sukham, the source and truth and reality of happiness, limitlessness. Paramahamsa gatim, which is the gati, which is the abode, the place of dwelling for the paramahamsa, for the jnanis, for the wise ones. I think that's where we left off last time. And this atma tattvam is turiyam and swapna jagara sushuptam avaiti nityam. So this atma tattva avaiti illumines and witnesses nityam, always, the swapna jagara and sushupta avasthanam, the dream, the waking, and the deep sleep state. And therefore it's called turiyam, the fourth. Here, Shankara echoes a prakriya, a method of instruction that's found in the Mandukya Upanishad, which talks about and inquires into the nature of the three experiences we have in life. The three experiences are the waking, the dream, and the deep sleep. And that's basically it. Everything else can be seen to be a subset of that. Okay, coma. Okay, I fainted. Those can all be subsumed under the label sushupta, sushupti. Deep sleep, jagra, waking experience. Oh, but I was drunk. That's still a waking experience, more or less. Swapna, dream state. And so avaiti means that which illumines, that which perceives, that which witnesses. All three of those states, nityam, it is the constant within all three of those states of experience. This nityam can be seen in two different ways. Let's first take it as an adverb. This fourth state we'll talk about, this fourth stateless state, this turiyam, which is a term from the Mandukya Upanishad. ceaselessly illumines, nityam avaiti, it ceaselessly illumines the waking dream and deep sleep state. So don't we have four states? Why would the Upanishad talk about waking, dream, and deep sleep? And then talk about a fourth. Is it separate from the other three? And why do we even care about looking at dream or waking or deep sleep? Because it points to, and this will become very important in the next verse, it points to what we are not. In a dream experience, we take ourselves to be a character within the dream. And in fact, we are the character in a dream. We are the dream objects, and we are the dream experience itself. The dream material is not separate from me. I am manifesting the entire dream creation. From me, this entire dream creation is born. In me, the entire dream creation is sustained. It's sustained by me. It exists in me. And it resolves back into me. I am, in a sense, the Ishwara, the Lord of my dream experience. In truth, there's nothing there in the dream but me. But in the dream experience, I take myself to be a small being interacting with a big, wide world, which may or may not make much sense at the time. And then when I wake up, all of that collapses. It's like I elbow, the creation elbows that whole dream world away, and then I'm awake. And now, in the waking experience, I take myself to be this character, whether it be a mother or a father or a sister or a brother or a swami or an employer or employee. I take myself to be this character now, this time around, and I go through this big wide world. And then I go to sleep. And sleep is a place where I love to go. I fluff my pillow. I get the right comforter. You know, I crack the window just a little bit to get some fresh air, but then I cover myself so I'm not too cold. We love to go to sleep because what do we experience in deep sleep? Nothing. Blissful ignorance. I'm aware of nothing in deep sleep. But we all love to go there. And this seems to be the summation of my experience. I wake up and do it again. I wake up, I go to sleep, I dream, I do things in my dream, I do nothing in deep sleep. I wake up, I do things in the waking, I experience things, I do things, I go to sleep, I dream, I experience things, I do things, I go to sleep, I don't do anything, I go to deep sleep. All of my karmendriyas and jnanendriyas resolve, all of my capacity to perceive and to do anything resolves in deep sleep. And then I wake up and do it again. They're like Groundhog's Day. But the Shruti says, in actuality, what this Atma Tattva is untouched by the particularities of the dream, the waking, or the deep sleep. If I really were the waker, this character that I'm playing in this life as it unfolds in 2015, in whatever country we happen to be in, if I really was this person, then that would be permanent. This dream sleep could not come and elbow that person out of the way and create a whole new reality, a whole new character, an avatar within the virtual world of the dream world that I could inhabit and be. And then if I really am that character in the dream world, that would not be able to be pushed aside when I go to deep sleep. What I truly am does not leave me. The essence, the reality of something is something which does not change. The essence of fire is heat. Fire will always be hot. It could take on various forms, but it will always be hot. The truth of me will not leave me, regardless of what experience I'm having. In this waking world, we play many different roles, right? We have many different experiences, and they all come and go. They all come and go in my presence, as in today's meditation. In my presence, all feelings, all thoughts, all phenomena come and go. And I illumine all of them. And yet this person who I am so convinced I am, this individual with this heredity, with these relations, with these given relations and chosen relations, with these physical issues, with our joys and our sorrows and our history. I'm this person who I'm trying so hard to fix up. I'm really trying to be somebody. All that gets dropped mercilessly. I go to sleep, poof. Where'd the Swami go? It's a big disappearing act. And all of a sudden, I'm a helicopter pilot, or I'm surfing down a wave, or I'm sitting listening to some boring lecture by some other Swami. Or maybe I'm a fish, or maybe I'm walking in a meadow. Where did the Swami go? Where did my waking character go? Gone. Elbowed out of the way by the power of dream. Well, I must really be this surfer or this helicopter pilot or this hiker through the meadow or this listener. No, boom, that one goes away. And all of a sudden, I'm not experiencing anything. I'm just as though in a dark room with my eyes wide open. Nothing's happening. There's nothing to see here. Move along. Keep sleeping. No rapid eye movement for you here. You got to wait for a swapna. You got to wait for a dream for that to happen. Okay, so I'll dream again. Oh, look. Are those dinosaurs? And then I wake up. I wake up from sleep and I go, Pratasmarami hriti samspuratma tattvam. And I remember, I go, oh, I'm this little individual in this big wide world. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. Maybe I'm not. Because I am the one who goes to sleep. I am the one who dreams. I am the one who wakes up. I am the one who informs and inhabits this role, these changing roles. If I really were a father, I would have to be a father to my mother. Well, that wouldn't work. If I were really an employee, then I'd have to be an employee to the postman. We take these roles on so effortlessly, and we're not threatened. We don't feel like we lose ourselves when we go from playing the role of a father to one of a son to one of an employee, right? Because I am the one constant. I am the one thread, the sutra, that is present in all the flowers on the mala of our day-to-day experience. A rose. Ah, here's this experience, driving to work. Oh, a chrysanthemum. Oh, the boss is mad at me now. Oh, a marigold. Ah, that was a good lunch. Ah, a lotus. I'm in a dream. This is such a wonderful dream. This constant sutra, this constant thread of me-ness, of I, of my presence, is called Turiyam, the fourth. Because you add them all up and you get me. But the thing is that this Turiyam is not a fourth state. It's the one constant that underlines all experiences. And it's unwavering. It's Nityam. It's Avaiti. It shines and illumines all experiences, whether they be purely subjective like dream, or apparently objective like the waking experience, or the lack of any experience like deep sleep. I am the one who illumines them all, and that is called Turiyam. There is no ripple in my presence when I transition from one to another to another to another. I can pop from one universe. It's like an avatar in a virtual world. I can pop into one dream experience, and that can completely be dismissed, and I pop myself in a completely different dream world where I have a completely different set of relationships, and I have a completely different role to play. And then I pop into this waking world, and I have a completely different role to play. And there's no ripple in my presence. If I really was anything that was specific to these experiences of waking, dream, and deep sleep, then I couldn't go to the next state. And yet I do, because the one continuous thread is me, is my present, is my conscious luminosity, is my luminous existence. I don't know how many ways I can figure out to say that. Conscious existence, or existent consciousness, or luminous presence. they're all ways of saying sat chit. And what we're looking at is ananda, ananta, the limitlessness, because we look at our experience. We have to start from where we are, right? This is a teaching tradition. And what we have is our everyday experience. So we look at those experiences as a way to get a handle on what we are not. The next verse is going to say neti neti, not this, not this. And so we use this, we start from where we are. We use our experience in saying, not this, not this, not this. And yet there is a fourth, there is a presence that is continuous throughout. Nityam, it's ceaseless. It ceaselessly illumines all experiences. Another way to look at this is that the Atma Tattvam is called Nityam. So Nityam could be an adverb modifying Avaiti. It illumines Nityam constantly, ceaselessly. But what is doing the illumining, the witnessing, is Atma Tattvam, the truth of myself, which is Nityam. Another way to look at the word Nityam. Nityam is timeless. It's often translated as eternal, as if you just go on and on and on and on and on. You don't go on and on and on and on and on. Time doesn't pertain to you. I, as consciousness, illumine time. Time is just an artifact, and it's actually just mitya. Time depends upon me. When is now? What is time? Right? What is time? Well, there's a past, present, and the future. Our language reveals a past and a present and a future. Well, what do we mean by now? How do we determine what's past and what's future? Let's say the present. The largest quantity of time that I could find is one life of Brahmaji. It's supposed to be 311 trillion years. Brahmaji. It's supposed to be 311 trillion years. That's his lifespan. Is the life of Brahmaji 311 trillion years? Is that what we mean by now? And one day of Brahman is a kalpa, which is only 4.32 billion years. And one kalpa, is that now? Or is it a yuga? Each kalpa has 1,000 yugas. Is that what we mean by now? Each yuga is 4.3 million years. These are the time scales that the Puranas talk about in terms of the longevity of this universe. And even the life of Brahman, there will be a next Brahma. I keep saying Brahman. It should be Brahmaji, right, the creator of this world, there will be another Brahmaji coming up. And so Yuga is 4.3. What do we mean? Do we mean the current Yuga? Is that now? Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga? Is it a millennium? Now this, now, right now. Yeah, this millennium. Is it a century? Is it a decade? Is it a year? Is it a month? Yeah, right now, this month. Is it a fortnight? How about a week? A day? An hour? A minute? What do we mean by now? Any length of time is divisible. A minute, a second, a decisecond, a centisecond, a millisecond, a microsecond, a nanosecond, a picosecond, a femtosecond, an attosecond, a zeptosecond. Truth is really a zeptosecond, right? That's what I mean by now. It's one sextillionth of a second. That's what I mean by right now. You're going to have somebody come along who can also use Google, apparently, and say, no, 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 the present moment is not a zeptosecond, it's a yoctosecond, which is one septillionth of a second, 10 to the negative 24th. And I'm sure there's more divisions of what we mean by now. What do we mean by now? Rabana Maharshi in Saddarshana talks about time and the present. He says, Bhutam bhavishyat cha bhavat swakale tat vartamanasya vihaya tattvam hasya nakim syat jagabhavi charcha vina eka sankhyam ganana eva loke. Ramana says, Bhutam bhavishyat cha, the past and the future, bhavat swakale, in its own time, was merely the present. Bhavat swakale, in its own time, is only this, the present. The past has no reality. The past was real in the past because it was the present. The future will be real in the sense that it will be the present when it comes. But the past is just a notion, and the future is just a notion. And so how do we define what the present is? The present is the presence of existence. He says, tat vartamanasya vihaya tattvam, abandoning the truth of the present moment, hasya nakim syat gata bhavi charcha, reflection upon the past and the future, would it not be laughable? He's saying, would it not be laughable to even think about the past and the future if you give up the truth, if you abandon the reality of the present? In other words, we can't talk about the past without resolving the past into the present. And we can't talk about the future without resolving the future into the present, because in its own time, the future will only be the present. Until then, it's just notional. And in the past, in its own time, swakale, it was bhavat, it was only the present. So it only is present is the present. He says, vina eka sankhyam ganana eva loke, like in this world, loke, in this world, it's like trying to count without the number one. This is Ramana. He's saying, if we ignore that the reality of the past and the future, it's just the present, it's like trying to do mathematics without having a number one. It's impossible. What's only there is the one number, and you can add them and subtract them and divide them and multiply them, but it's all dependent on that one. And so too, the past and the future are all dependent on the one presence, which is me, which is my conscious existence. It's just mithya. The truth of time is what obtains now. Anything else in terms of any length of time is divisible, and it's infinitely divisible. And so the truth of every moment is just now, is just now, is just now, is just now. So this nityam, atmatattvam, the truth of the self is time free, because time is just conceptual. Time is just notional. Time is fluid. The last time I went on a spaceship and approached the speed of light, when I came back, everybody else was really old, and I just gained a day. Or so I did in my thought, Einsteinian thought experiment. Time is fluid. Time is conceptual. Time is mithya. What is mithya is that which has a dependent reality. The notion of time depends upon the reality, which is the present. And so this atma-tattvam is time-free. It's not eternal. It doesn't go on forever like a bad movie. It is time-free. And he goes on to say, tad brahma nishkalam aham nacha bhuta sankaha. This is the fourth line of the first verse that we're on. That brahma, in other words, this is what it is I'm talking about. This is what it is I'm meditating on. This atma tattva, this truth of the self, which shines in the heart, which is of the nature of satchidananda, which is what jnanis appreciate directly, and which is the turiyam, the one underlying conscious existence that is the thread throughout all of our experiences in the waking, dream, and deep sleep state, that illumines the waking and deep sleep state, and that atmatattva is time-free, and I'm meditating upon tad brahma, that brahma, which is nishkalam, and which is I, and which is bhuta sangaha. I am that Brahman, which I meditate upon. And we'll talk about this paradox of how do I meditate upon the meditator in the next verse. But this Brahma is nishkalam. Nishkalam. Nirgata kala yasmat. That from which all parts are gone. It is without division. And it is bhuta sangaha na. Itina, it is not a conglomeration, an assemblage of elements. It is partless. This Brahma, this I, has no parts. Because anything that has a part necessarily is conditioned by space. And Atma is said to be Desha Kala Vastu Paricheda Rahita. It enjoys Rahityam. It is free from those apparently constraining attributes, apparently limiting attributes of time, space, and causality, and being attributes of being an object. Consciousness existence has no parts. You cannot divide existence. Say you have a pot, and a pot contains space. We're using this drishtanta a little differently. We're not talking about the relationship between the pot and the clay. What we're talking about is the pot and the space, right? So we have a little space in this pot. And this pot space, it has a limitation, right? It only takes up so much space. And here we have a bigger pot space. It takes up more volume. What is it that creates this limited pot space, the ghatakasha, the space within the pot? Well, you can say it's the clay, it's the form of the pot that contains the space within the pot. It's the presence of the clay that encases the space. But in reality, what creates the pot space? In reality, what creates my limited individuality? In reality, there is no pot space because space exists outside of the pot, it exists inside the pot, and space exists through and through the pot. Space is partless. There is no real conditioning, limiting factor in the form of a pot for space. There is no inherent limiting factor in this jivatvam for Brahman, in this individuality for me. I am partless. Space is partless. It is not constrained. It is not limited. It is not divided by the pot. The space exists on a different order of reality than the pot. Atma, conscious existence, exists in a different order of reality than anything that apparently limits me. And that just as space has no parts, so too consciousness has no parts. Anything that can be identified as a part is an object of consciousness. Thoughts have parts. Thoughts have a beginning, middle, and an end. I don't. I am the one thread that persists throughout all experiences. I don't have a part. Existence doesn't have a part. Nor am I a bhuta sangha, an aggregate of elements, subtle or gross elements. Nothing touches me. Everything occurs in my silent presence. This physical body is a conglomeration, an aggregate of physical elements. My emotional, mental world, all of my internal experiences, you can look at them as subtle elements, sukshma bhutas, they call them. And yet, these are all witnessed by me. They're all illumined by me, by this atma tattvam, by this truth which is atma, which is the one thread that goes through all experiences. So I am inherently free from division. I am indivisible, and I am partless. I am not an aggregate. If I take myself to be anything that's an aggregate, like the body, the mind, the senses, they're all an accumulation. There's a conglomeration of stuff. Naham, that is not me. And I am partless and indivisible, just like space. It's as though we have two spaces here. We have a medium space and a smaller space. But really, we just have one space. So too, there's nothing to slice and dice existence. There's nothing that can slice and dice consciousness. So, prata smarami hridi samspuradatma tattvam sat chit sukham paramahamsa gatim turiyam yat swapna jagra sushuptam avaiti nityam tad brahma nishkalam aham nacha bhuta sangaha. Let's go on to the second verse here. So repeat this once after me, part by part, and then we'll do the whole thing together. Pratarbhajami manaso. Repeat. Pratarbhajami manaso. Vachasamagamyam. Vachasamagamyam. Vacho vibhanti, vacho vibhanti, nikhilayadanugrahena, nikhilayadanugrahena, yanneti neti vachanahi, nigama avochan, nigama avochan. Tam deva deva majam, tam deva deva majam, achutam ahuragriyam, achutam ahuragriyam. Let's do it together. Pratarbhajami manaso vachasamagamyam. Vacho vibhanti nikhilayadanuk. Grahena yanneti neti vachanair nigama avochan tandeva deva majam achutamahuragriyam. Each of these three verses, not the Pulashruti at the end, but each of these three verses begin with Pratar at dawn. And then some form of a verb which means to meditate. So pratasmarami, pratarbhajami, and then pratarnamami. So this verse begins with pratar, in the morning, at dawn, bhajami, I worship or I adore, manasaha vachasam, genitive, singular and genitive plural, agamyam, that which is agamyam, that which is unapproachable, unreachable, unobjectifiable for the mind and for speech. Vacho vibhanti nikilaha yadanukrahena, but nikilaha vachaha vibhanti, nikilaha, all speech, vachaha, vibhanti, shines, all speech shines, manifests, yad anukrahena, by whose grace. So this atma tattvam, the truth of the self, is unapproachable by speech and by the mind, and yet by whose grace all speech shines, is manifest. Yat neti neti vachanahi nigamaha avokshan, but which the nigamaha, the Vedas and the teaching tradition say, avochan, avochan is a lung, aorist, 3-3, say, reveal, but which all of the Vedas and teaching tradition reveal by the words, vachanahi, na iti, not this, this atma tattva, which is unapproachable by words or by the mind, but by whose grace the words and the mind function, and which is revealed by the tradition with the words, na iti, not this, not this. Tad deva devam ajam achutam ahuhu agriyam. They say that this Brahman, this truth, is deva devam, the luminary of all luminaries, the god of all gods. But really here it means the luminary of all luminaries, ajam, unborn, achutam, unchanging, undiminishing, and agriyam, a primary cause, the first cause. There's a lot here. So let's take it part by part. Pratarbhajami, at dawn, bhajami. Now, bhajami we think of as worship, I worship. But bhaja here means sevayam, in the sense of seva, which means I turn towards, I adore, I dwell in, or I relish. I relish this truth, which is agamya. Agamya. Gam means to go. Gamya means approachable. Agamya says that which is not approachable for the manas or for the speech. That which is vachasam and manasaha agamya. It is not approachable. It is not objectifiable by speech or by concept. Why is that? Language operates within duality, within pairs of opposites, within distinctions. I know something is a chair because it's not a table. I know something is blue because it's not green. I have a concept of what a rainbow is, and I have a concept of what a cat is, and they're different things. Rarely do I see a rainbow-colored cat. So language operates to distinguish one thing from another. That's why we have dictionaries full of billions and billions of words. Thoughts, concepts, live within a world of opposites, live within a world of duality. Thoughts, concepts, and words function to capture this empirical reality and help us understand and manipulate it. But Brahma, Atma, is desha kala vastu paricheda rahitaha. Like I said, it's devoid of space and time and attributes. So how can language begin to approach, and therefore how can the mind begin to approach that which has no spatial aspect, no temporal aspect, and no attributes. It's not a distinct object because consciousness is not objectifiable. If consciousness were objectifiable, how would we know that? We would have to have another consciousness that would be able to objectify that first consciousness. There would be an infinite regression. And that's not what happens. We perceive because consciousness is self-luminous and self-sustaining, self-substantive. It's the only substantive. It's where the buck stops. And therefore, we can perceive things because I am existent consciousness. But I cannot objectify consciousness. Words can objectify objects. And the mind can objectify objects because they have space. They take up space, they have attributes, and they are temporal. And consciousness illumines space. Consciousness illumines time. And consciousness illumines all objects, everything that has attributes. And it is not objectifiable. My being, as in today's meditation, is not objectifiable. I cannot hold out my being for you to perceive with your eyes or even to understand with your brain, with your mind. This consciousness does not join time-space. This is an echo of the Taittiriya Upanishad, yato vacho nivartante apra apya manasasaha. That from which words retreat along with the mind, having not gained their object. That's from the Taittiriya Upanishad. They fall back because they're unattainable by the mind, because I am not objectifiable. This is expressed in Dakshinamurti as well. Dakshinamurti is a beautiful image of the Lord as teacher. And it is the Murti, the image in the temple in Anikati Gurukulam in South India, Pujaswamiji's ashram there, and in the Gurukulam in Salersburg. And the first teacher, Ishwara, the Lord as the first teacher, is represented as teaching in silence. Maunam vyakya prakatita parabrahma tattvam vivanam. He's maunam. He's teaching through silence, but he has the chin mudra, and that's the teaching right there. He's actually teaching in silence, and that represents the fact that speech and the mind cannot reach the self. This chin mudra is a, just very briefly, is a beautiful symbol, a mudra of Advaita, because here you have the circle of unity between Brahman and Jiva, which stands separate from these three fingers. These three fingers can stand for sattva, rajas, and tamas, can stand for the waking dream and deep sleep experiences. They can stand for the stula sharira, sukshma sharira, and karana sharira, the three bodies. And this finger, the index finger, stands for the individual. So when we see that the truth of the individual is separate from the other three, neti neti, na iti na iti, it's not this gross body, it's not the subtle body, it's not the causal body. It stands on its own, and when it's united with the thumb, which stands for Brahman, because Brahman is the basis of the thumb. You can't do much with your hands if you don't have thumbs. It stands apart, and yet is an integral part of everything and gives the functionality of the hands. When the index finger unites with the thumb, when the jiva recognizes that it is one with Brahman, separate from the other three, that's Advaita, and that's the chin mudra, chit mudra, the symbol of just pure consciousness. And that's what's in one of Dakshinamurti's hands. Yet he is said to be maunam, silent one. But isn't this paradoxical? Because there's all this teaching which uses words and uses concepts. The Taittiriya Upanishad also says, Brahmavid apnoti param, the one who knows Brahman attains the limitless. So how dare we use words to try to describe the limitless? When it says it's unapproachable, when truth is unapproachable by words in the mind, and then it says we have to know it. How do we know it without words? How do we know it without the mind? Well, if you look at it this way, it's even paradoxical to say that it cannot be known by words, because we're using words to say that it is unknowable by words, trying to give an indication of what it is. What is truth? What is reality? I'll tell you what reality is. Reality is agamyam, manasaha agamyam. Reality is that which is unattainable by the mind and by words, by speech. Well, you just tried to tell me with words and with a concept what reality is, namely that it's unattainable by the words you just used and by the concept you just put into my head. The concept of unattainability by words and thought is a concept you just put in my head to try to describe, explain what reality is. And yet you just said that it's unattainable by thoughts and words. So what does this mean? What do we do with this paradox? The next statement in this verse says, Vacho vibhanti nikilaha. Nikilaha vachaha vibhanti. All words shine due to whose grace? Yad anugrahena. All words reveal their meaning due to whose grace? Vibhanti means shine variously. So what does it mean? By whose grace all words reveal meaning and yet is not captured by words and the mind? It's because I, as simple being, as simple consciousness, illumine all thoughts. I illumine all words. In the last line here, he'll say, Deva Devam. This Atma Tattvam is Deva Devam. It's the God of gods. What does that mean? Deva means that which shines, from div, to shine. Deva means a shining being. It's a luminary, something that shines. What is the luminary of luminaries? What is it by which even shining things shine? We say that an opaque object, a chair, is illumined by the sun. The chair comes to light because of the sun, because of the reflected light of the sun. So to the moon comes to light because of the reflected light of the sun. How does the sun come to light? The sun comes to light because my eyes shine, right? We think, oh, the moon shines after the sun. The sun is self-luminous. But really, the sun comes to light because my eyes shine. And my eyes shine because my mind shines. And my mind shines because consciousness shines. So really, I am the one that illumines the luminaries. As the Kena Upanishad says, I am the mind of the mind. I am the ear of the ears. I am the eye of the eyes. The eyes shine due to their borrowed consciousness because of their sattva guna. The capacity of the senses to see, the capacity of the mind to think, is due to the presence of mayas, sattva guna, the reflective nature of subtle material. And so this Atma is the Deva Devam. And so it's by whose grace, by the very existence and consciousness of the Atma, all things are known, all words shine, all meanings come to be. I am the thing that shines behind all the thoughts and all the words. And in the end, all knowledge, all thoughts resolve into silence, into the mystery of my being. So the teaching is done in a certain way to help the mind resolve. The teaching methodology is meant to resolve the mind into my very being, like today's meditation. I don't need to do anything to be. I need to appreciate a fact about myself. And the reality is that I am experience itself. I am not a particular aspect of any particular experience. I am not a particular experience in the waking dream or deep sleep state. And I'm not even the experiencer, because that's a role. I just shine. Consciousness just is and simply shines. Reality is not a mental experience. Reality is not a new experience. When I see that, the mind resolves into its own being, just like a pot resolves into clay. If a pot recognizes that the truth of itself is merely clay, it can rest in that knowledge. And you could say, the pot resolves into clay. The pot recognizes its truth, and its truth is clay. the pot doesn't go away. The pot was never not clay. And yet an enlightened pot will recognize that it is nothing but clay. So too, this mind recognizes that it is nothing but existent consciousness. And any particularities of a thought in the mind are as much mithya as the pot is to the clay. Because the pot doesn't exist outside of the clay. The pot depends on the clay for its reality. So too, the truth of me as an individual resolves into simple existent consciousness. And the jivatvam, the attributes of my individuality, are merely incidental, just like the attributes of the pot are merely incidental to the clay. Now, how does the Shastra reveal this? It says, Neti neti vachanahi nigamaha avochan. The nigamaha, all the Vedas and the teaching tradition of avochan reveal this vachanahi by the words, na iti na iti, not this, not this. This is a very powerful and pervasive teaching methodology. It negates all falsely limiting superimpositions upon myself, upon the individual, upon me. Why do we do that? Because if someone just came up to you and said, you are free, go and be happy, you could say, ah, I'm free. Okay, now what? You'll scratch your head and say, yeah, that's a nice thought. I don't get it. So the teaching tradition, the teaching methodology is to start where the student is. And the student is normally where he or she takes him or herself to be this body, this kariya karana sanghata, this bhuta sangaha, as we saw, this accumulation, this aggregate of elements. I'm the body, I'm the mind, I'm the senses, I am the personality, I am my subconscious. That's a big one. I am my deep samskaras. I am these tendencies, and therefore I'm good or bad based on what I do as an expression of what my samskaras are. I am all these incidental things. And so the Shruti says, the Brihadaranyaka says, Esha neti neti atma. Mandukya Karaka says, Saha eshaha neti neti iti. There's numerous references to this na iti na iti, because this is where the teaching starts. This is where the identification with what you are not begins. It's what's called the Tvampadartha Vichara, the inquiry into the nature of the word you in the Mahavakya Tattvamasi. You are that. And that begins by, first of all, extricating my identity from all the incidentals of my self-image. And I take myself to be tall. I take myself to be short because I take myself to be the body. I take myself to be healthy. I take myself to be unhealthy because of the condition of the body. I take myself to be happy, to be sad. And all time, all attributes, all space is negated because the truth of pure existence and pure consciousness is not involved, is not subject to any of the vicissitudes that occur within space or time. And Atma has no attributes. So it is Desha Kala Vastu Paricheda Rahita. It is free from all of these. It's like the space in this pot. If the space in this pot takes itself to be limited by the presence of the clay, then we need to point out the space is not limited by this upadhi, this apparently limiting adjunct, which is the pot. You are not the form of the pot. You are not the color of the pot. You are not limited by the pot. I am not the color of the body. I am not the shape or size of the body. I am not limited by the body. In fact, the space is not discontinuous. The pot doesn't limit space. From the perspective of the pot, there is a little pot space. From the perspective of this body-mind-sense complex, there is this little limited individual. From the perspective of space, the pot is laughable. From the perspective of space, the notion of pot space, space being limited by the pot, is laughable. From the Paramartika Drishti, from the perspective of Brahman, of the truth of myself, my limitations as a jiva are laughable because they're not me, and yet I take myself to be them. And so the wayfarer, the sadhu, makes that 10th man get up, lines up all those other 9 men, all the other 9 boys, and says, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Neti, 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 na iti, na iti. You're not that. 10th man is not that one. It's not that one. It's not that one. Tattvamasi, you are that 10th man. And the mind, in a sense, just gives up and goes, I see that. But first, the teacher has to create the context. The shruti, the tradition, this wayfarer has to create the context for the 10th man to see that he is himself a 10th man. And he gains freedom from sorrow. And he gains something that was always there. And so what this neti neti does is it negates what is technically called the vachartha, the immediate meaning of the words. And it indicates in a very subtle and technical way, which we don't have time to go into in detail here, the implied meaning of the word. So what is negated is the immediate meaning of the word you, the immediate meaning of the word I, because the immediate meaning of the word I is this individual, this body-mind-sense complex, and that is not my truth. So he finishes up saying, Tat deva devam achutam ahuhu agriyam. So that which I am relishing, which I am worshiping, what I am attending to with devotion and adoration and relishing, that is the truth of myself, which is deva devam, which is the luminary of all luminaries. The Kena Upanishad says, Shrotrasya Shrotram, Manaso Manaha, etc. It's the mind of the mind and the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye. It's the consciousness behind all these things which enjoy a borrowed consciousness. It is ajam, ajaha, unborn. It doesn't join time and space. It's like the pot doesn't join space. The pot is dependent upon space, and for an ignorant little pot space, it can take itself to be limited because of the pot. But the pot lives on a different dimension than space. Space is not at all limited by the pot, and so the pot space is purely notional. You focus on the space, and there's nothing here that limits space. Ajaha means unborn. When was a pot space born? The pot space was never born. There was never a time when the pot space was different from the Mahakasha. The Ghatakasha was never different than the Mahakasha. There's no time when this little space inside this pot has ever been different from the totality of space. You could say that this pot space was born when the pot was born, but that's neglecting the fact that the pot does not limit space at all. You could say that I, this individual, was born when this body-mind-sense complex was born, but that's negating the truth that I, as conscious existence, was never born. I am ajaha. I don't participate in time. I am time-free. Time is mithya. What time are you talking about? As Ramana says, the truth of time is merely the present. Any notion of time is purely mithya. It's purely dependent upon giving reality to time and space and attributes which don't deserve to enjoy the status of being real. So this ajaha, atma, is unborn. It's not objectifiable. It's not subject to time. It's a silent presence that is the truth of all time. It is achuta. Achuta means that which cannot be changed, that which cannot vanish or sink. It is the one light which illumines all experiences. And it doesn't sink down into the order of reality which would allow it to be modified or even touched. space does not come down into the reality of the pot in order to be constrained by pot. It doesn't exist in the same level of reality. So too, and therefore it can't be changed. Pot doesn't change. Space doesn't change when I move the pot around. It's just the form of the clay that moves around. And so it is achyuta. It does not vary from its true nature. You can't slice space. You can't dice space. You can't change the nature of space. Space is nishkalam. It's indivisible, and it doesn't have any parts. So too, consciousness and existence are the same. And it is agriyam. And agriyam means the first cause. It means it is the cause. So you look at a dream. Let's say I dream of a city. What was there before the existence of the city in my dream? I was there. What is there during the presence of the city? I am there. What is there when the dream city goes? I am there. I am the upadana karanam. I am the material cause of the dream. From me the dream comes, by me the dream is sustained, and in me the dream resolves. And yet I undergo no change, just like a rope. Just like a rope snake. The rope undergoes no change to become the snake. The rope is the vivarta upadana karanam, the material cause which undergoes no change to become the snake. It's just maya which accounts for the presence of the snake. And maya is yama. One etymology of maya is yama, that which is not. Maya has no independent reality. So, if you accept that there is a snake there, you have to say the rope is the material cause for the snake. When you take a flashlight and you shine it there, you go, ah, what a fool. There was never any snake there to begin with. But the cause of the snake, the very material cause of the snake, is the rope. And yet in reality, it's just a function of maya. There is no snake there. And so too, this timeless chit existence, which is free from space and free from time, is the very stuff of this universe. Just like the rope is the stuff of the snake. And we think that this Brahman is limitless, but it's only from the perspective of limited things do we say it's limitless. We're constantly negating. The Chaucer is constantly negating. Look at these words. Achyuta. It is non-changing. It is aja. It is unborn. It is nitya, which means it's free from time. So to appreciate the simple being that I am first requires me to appreciate what I am not. And only when I appreciate the essential, what is essential in me, which is me, and what is incidental, and differentiate the two through this viveka, can I appreciate that really the incidental has no independent existence from the essential. I need to start from where I am, and I take myself to be this karya karana sanghata, this body-mind-sense complex. Let's start there. Na iti, na iti, na iti. I am simple being. I'm simple conscious being that illumines all experiences. What's the nature of all these experiences? Well, that's a different question. This is the very basis. This is the very starting point of the inquiry, because we have to appreciate what we are as our simple, simple existent consciousness. And then we can ask the question, well, what's the nature of all this anatma? As we saw in today's meditation, this anatma, the status of this anatma is mithya. The rope will have to say, oh, I'm not the snake. I'm not the snake. I'm not slimy. I don't have fangs. I'm not going to shed my skin next month. I'm not any of the characteristics of a snake. Well, what's the reality of the snake? I am pure rope. Well, what about the snake? We have two things. We have rope and the snake. No, the snake has no independent reality from you. The snake is just an incidental projection. There's no reality to the snake. You are the truth of everything that appears as the snake. I am the truth of all of this that appears. And so next week, we can talk about the next verse. And also, we can talk about this a little bit further. If I am everything, well, I must be really, really big. I must be as huge as the universe. That's incomprehensible. I must be as old as the Big Bang. And then before that, how long will I be? How long have I been? How big, how small am I? We can talk about that a little bit next week. Om Swasti Prajabhyah Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahimahi Shaha Go Brahmanebhyah Shubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshati Parijanyah Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yancho Varahitah Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Amritangamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
It was wonderful, and I say that I have to listen many times.
Yes, you can say that again, that you have to listen to it many times. You know, this was really awesome, Swamiji. I think every word of yours has to be reflected upon several times, and every little thing that you said has such tremendous impact that I think the more and more you think about it, I think the better for us to it, you know, much more deeply than as we just hear it.
So, Swamiji,
yes, sir.
Do you have the English translation of it?
I'll do my own translation and send it out. I looked on the web and found some translations and didn't like them. So I'll translate it all and I'll send it out.
Okay, great.
It's difficult because some words you want to pack with a lot of meaning, and some words can be very confusing.
I just asked Hema.
Papa was just asking.
I was here asking Hema. What happened to the English translation of the Swamiji?
Time is just mitya. Time is just an illusion. So I didn't say in whose lifetime it would be delivered. Maybe about 311 trillion years. No, I'll do it. I'll send it out for next class.
I could not help thinking, Swamiji, that just going to the Gita class, this word ascharya, I find it such a marvel that the teacher is able to accommodate and, you know, speak with us about when we have all the wrong identifications, or when we're happy and sad and healthy and unhealthy.
Limited.
But it's such a tremendous compassion. I think that's a marvel also as part of the teaching.
Yeah, Pooja Swamiji was very good at that. I mean, his name, Dayananda, whose Ananda is found in compassion. And he was always a living example of that. He was indefatigable, too. He'd always have a group of people waiting for him, and he'd give whatever he could. And I think it just demonstrated the depth of his wisdom, as evidenced by his selflessness.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I always wonder how he had the time. For all this, how many hours in a day was he working? Was he sleeping at all?
He gave the Gita class with the Bhasha in the evenings. The classes that the Gita home study was based on happened after dinner. And then he would have an informal satsang after that. We just sit and talk about anything. And then come 9:30 or 10, then people would start lining up outside of his door to have individual conversations with him. I don't know how long that lasted, till midnight at least. And then at 6 a.m., he was down for meditation again.
Can I ask you another question, Swamiji?
Please.
How did you think of this wonderful stotram? Yeah, it's awesome. It's amazing. It's like, you know, it's like finding a nugget in the whole sea.
I've never heard Pooja Swamiji do this, but other teachers have. And I was looking for something short that I could do before the break and starting Kaivalya Upanishad. I thought it was something we could cover in about 3 classes. I wish I had 4 or 5 classes for it.
So next week, we will have the class, right?
Yes, let's have the class next week, and then there will be a couple weeks break. And then you can go back and learn it by heart. And then when we come back, there will be a pop quiz.
Yeah. In fact, I was thinking it would be nice. You spend so much time teaching us Sanskrit and so on. I think especially for Sanskrit, I think you should give us a 101 exam or something like that.
Nishkalam.
And then I'd have to give you certificates and...
No grades.
You're all good. Yeah. I think Bhagawan tests us all enough during the course of the day. And he's the one who's doing all the centralized testing here.